get the paper ready for a 30-page paper or something, so closer to what you do for FAST earlier, so that we can actually work on the draft. While Leo, if he has some time, can think about benchmarks to run for us.
Yeah.
That was the earlier plan. So I made some progress because of the last few churn in the last week or so. There's still some internally trying to figure out some of the things that needs to be done and stuff. So long story short, I didn't spend too much time in it. So that's something that I'm going to work on in the future, at least this week and next week.
That sounds good, Swami, and it's perfectly understandable with all the things that are going on inside your company. If you need any help from me at any point, you know, feel free. Okay, I just got a response from Leo saying that he doesn't have a call in information. Perfect. Okay.
Oh, okay. I sent it to him too.
Well, I have it here somewhere. Okay, let me write to him. Call in information. Yeah, so, yeah, like I was saying, if you have, you know, if you think I can help in any way, do let me know, because I have a few free cycles this summer, and
okay.
I'd like to contribute as much as I can with the writing.
Yeah. I think that's where I think you can help us quite a bit in terms of making a difference between it getting in or getting good reviews.
I'll try. and I can contribute with my time, and but I guess I need some direction in terms of, you know, some starting point, and I think you would be a good person to provide me with that starting point, and then I can do a pass, maybe a more detailed pass than
definitely.
I usually get time
so,
for.
Yeah, I'll actually put my foot down and do something more focused.
And I believe that we had discussed what the content should be, right? We had so many different possibilities.
No, so what we finally agreed on basically is the basic functionality of a KV store, the APIs, and talk more about the FTL layer primitives and say how we are going to leverage it to actually implement the functionality of a KV store.
Yeah.
Just that itself will actually be a good thing to talk about. And we also are going to focus on right amplification and the need of what benefits that we provide, like avoiding compaction and doing things more deftly.
Yeah.
So, hi, Leo.
Hey, 30 minutes late, but here I am.
Hey, Leo.
Never too late, and good job on your talk. Heard that it went pretty good.
There was a brief moment of panic at the beginning because the laptop wasn't working. But I think overall it went well.
Yeah, it did. And one comment, by the way, which I got, and perhaps it's relevant for our FAST submission also, is that I think we need to provide more background in terms of what is our building block. And maybe it's in the paper, but in Leo's talk, I think there were a couple of people after the talk who were asking, okay, well, what is implemented by you guys versus what is already implemented in the FTL and that sort of stuff, and how, right? I think there is a paper that talks about how the Fusion FTL does atomics and things like that, and I think we might have to actually give some background from that other paper.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that the reader is not, you know, is not at a loss for information when trying to interpret all the new material that we are presenting. The second thing which I got from the second kind of feedback, high-level feedback I got, was that our hot storage paper, a lot of people said that your hot storage paper is almost like a conference paper because it has all the results and everything and the conclusion and all that. So I'm a little, that comment was a little bit of an alarming thing for me. It's just that we have to somehow clearly differentiate and present new material relative to the hot storage paper. And this is something that Margot told me. And so, and a couple of other people too, which is, which was a little bit of a, and she was basically saying that, well, hot storage is not for papers like yours because it's more or less a complete piece of work, but, you know, hot storage is more for ideas and something that you don't have a conclusion for yet, right? So it's just, we have to be really watching out for that differentiating material with, between our hot storage and fast submissions.
Okay. I think that's good feedback, actually.
Yeah, and it was something that she said that not just your paper, but a couple of other papers in hot storage had the same issue, according to her, that it was too complete. Well, anyway, so that was something we need to watch out. I believe that Margot is on the PC for fast, so she is going to be, if she is, I think I saw her name. If she is, she's going to be watching very carefully. We have to be, we have to do a good job on the differentiation.
Okay. And I think the first feedback is also useful where we can actually give background and talk about the primitives that exist that we implemented.
Yeah. I think that was, for many people, I don't know, Leo, what your what the feedback you got, what were the comments you had after your talk. I think there were a couple of questions. I don't recall exactly what they were. If you recall, maybe you can talk about them.
I did get the same questions, in the sense that it was not enough, the material that was presented was not enough for people to understand what's going on. And as a consequence of that, I had to go deeper into the primitive, and the conversation very often turned into a conversation of the FTL primitive as opposed to the actual implementation of the Kubernetes store. Maybe it was the way it was the way information was presented, or maybe just people find that more interesting. But I found myself very often spending more time about the actual primitive than the key value implementation. In the just conversing with people after the talk.
And what were the questions? Q&A, in the Q&A session, you got a couple of questions, right? What were those about?
The main question, I think, was about, like, why use the sparse address? And basically, how can you... the main question is, why using a sparse address? And it's like how, basically, the... people who build SSDs, they don't provide that. Mm. Like, how can we, why do you think that this is good? How is this going to work? How can we make use of that if the existing SSDs don't have that?
Yeah, so that's a good point. I think it was, if I can remember, was it the, who was this guy who asked this question? Anyway, it doesn't matter.
I keep forgetting his name, but it's from the guy from the tab, the one with white hair.
Oh, Michael Condit.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I think that was an interesting question. Basically, he was saying, and I'll just rephrase what Leo said, is that the sparse address is not a common building block for the with the FTL. And that seems to be critical to our KV design, right?
Correct.
And so, I think justifying that as a building block well is really important because FTLs don't, the common case FTL doesn't provide it. So, there are two implications of that, right? One is there, what is the cost of building that sparse address infrastructure inside the FTL? What are the motivations for a manufacturer to do so, right? And the second is, if you didn't have the sparse FTL, what does it take to build it inside the KV store, and does it make sense to build it inside the KV store instead of inside the FTL? Or does it have to be tightly integrated with the FTL? So there are many follow-up questions with that question.
I see, okay. So the key thing is, if the sparse address is going to be built by the key value store, then it becomes a regular key value store. There's no real reason to build what we are doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it boils down to any of the other key value stores that exist today.
Sure.
One of the values mainly we add is to push the mapping to the FTL itself. So I think it has to be built into this thing. I think we can talk about that and make a case for it in the fast paper.
Right.
I think that's something that's easily doable. It's not too hard to do.
Right. So I think another angle of looking at it, sorry, Leo, let me just tie in that other question in. Right, because I agree with Swami that we have to absolutely talk about it, but I think we have to talk about it from a different direction as well, which is current FTLs don't have it. And what is it about the sparse address space that is so critical, that is so attractive that future FTLs would have it? Or future FTLs will benefit significantly from having it. I think we have to make that case.
Yeah.
Because research is not just about what is prevalent today, but also, you know, what we expect will occur in the future.
Yep, exactly.
So go ahead, Leo.
The other thing that is perhaps in the same motivation block is the more discretion about the atomics.
Yeah,
it's the same idea, right? They're not provided by the typical FTL.
Yeah.
And some people argue that it's not trivial to build an atomic interface on existing logging infrastructures for the FTLs.
Yeah.
So I guess in the same space that we use for motivating the sparse address, perhaps we should also talk about the atomics. Although I figure that the atomics is a lot easier to sell because everybody wants atomic operation, especially if you don't have to pay a high performance price for them.
Yeah.
The other question I had about atomics was I think it was Ashwin Goyal who asked me this question about how atomics were implemented inside the FTL. And I said, I don't know much about it. I think there is a paper that talks about it, right?
Yep, exactly. It actually was in...
So I told him there is a paper and I think it was... was it a Fusion.io paper or Fusion.io paper?
Yeah, Fusion.io and with another university, Ohio University, I think.
Okay. So I said there is a paper out there and which talks about, but I think that he told me that he couldn't get out of his mind the whole idea of how atomics would be implemented at the FTL layer. So his mind basically was stuck at that point and he didn't even have a chance to listen to the rest of the talk because he was thinking about that all the time. So
okay, it's actually very straightforward. Yeah.
So well, I guess the point is that it would be good to provide some idea. I'm not saying that we should rewrite that, you know, we should capture everything, all the details, but some high-level idea of how atomics are done in that paper and point to that paper.
Absolutely.
To give some background, I think readers will appreciate that. So we are assuming atomicity and durability, right?
Yeah.
And for durability... So, for instance, Ashwin was asking things like, okay, you also need to write the mapping information for durability. And
correct.
So, and does that still mean one IO per operation for writes? And I said that, well, if you would put the metadata with the data and put version information, then I guess it would be. But I really don't know how that is implemented inside the FTL. So, it would be good to talk about some of these data. Huh?
That's the tricky part. It's the IP of Fusion.io.
So the question is, can we talk about it in the paper?
We can actually talk about it, what we talked about in the other paper.
Yeah. Anything that helps to address the one IO per write, because you know, this guy Ashwin was asking me how is that possible, because you have to do barriers and flushing of caches.
Really. So the way to think about it basically is, typically in all SSDs they have a out of band,
yeah,
which is basically, like I said, it's going to be metadata combination to it. So what they actually do in the other paper is very simple. They simply write a pattern of ones and zeros along with the metadata. So a pattern of ones followed by a zero indicates that the whole atomic write is being complete. So the power failure happens, you actually see a bunch, series of ones but no zeros. It means that the atomic write didn't complete. We can simply discard it and continue from the next time. Like we learned in the old data. That's the simplest way of thinking about conceptually what we do.
Right, and the atomic multi-write, that you're not explaining the atomic multi-write with this, right?
No, I'm explaining atomic multi-write because it's log structure.
If
things are never in place, things are always to the head of the log.
Okay.
So all these additional writes, all these different writes, go to the head of the log.
Yeah.
Each of them have a simple pattern of ones and zeros, ones followed by a zero.
Yeah.
And as long as we see the pattern for this multi-block, multi-write, we can determine if the write was atomically done, completed or not. So I can forward you the paper actually, so it's very easy, it's nicely explained the paper. The key thing basically is we never do in-place updates, it's always out of place and log structured writes.
You have to because of flash, right?
Exactly. That's already natural. And what we do basically, in addition to it, all you need to do basically is to add a simple pattern that lets you identify if the write was successfully completed or not.
But is there a transaction to mark saying that all of this stuff is part of one transaction? Is there a, like markers that are there? And so yeah, when you do multi-writes and stuff like this, so there is a transaction marker, and would you need a barrier for that? And
really, so that's the cleanest, that's some of the things that you can actually do to keep it very, very simple. Is you don't, the transaction marker is just a pattern of ones and zeros in the paper.
Okay.
Of course, you can always add begin and other things to transaction markers.
Yeah.
But the easiest way to think about it is just a series of ones followed by zeros.
Okay.
And if you see a zero, it means a transaction end.
Okay.
And
I see, okay. And you can stick in as many writes as you want in between.
Exactly.
And you're guaranteed that the medium is going to write this out sequentially and not in some arbitrary order.
Yeah.
Reorder them. Okay. So that's an assumption that the FTL is making about the device.
That's the assumption that, exactly, that's because FTL is the one that actually manages the data also, if you think about it.
No, FTL is the one that's writing to the device.
I guess I'm going to have to read the paper, because just based on what you're saying, I can think how that would be enough information, especially because things could be reordered.
Yeah, but I think that what...
reordered. Okay, let me actually, I'm going to send an email about the paper to both of you.
Yeah, I think, the high-level point here is that the implementation within the FTL, we might have to provide a little bit more detail to make it all believable. I think a lot of people are not taking it at face value. And then we can say, okay, all of this stuff is in another paper, which is doable in a paper, but not in a talk.
Yeah.
But even for a paper, I think it would be important for us to give a little bit of background as to what are the key ideas within, in that FTL implementation.
So, I totally agree with you. If you look at Leo's talk, he talked about the bunch of commonalities that actually exist in the key value store and also in the FTL layer.
Yeah.
If you look, one of the slides that talks about the log structuring, block remapping and stuff, we can actually probably have that diagram in the paper also.
Mm-hmm.
And talk a little bit more detailed about what is that FTL that is equivalent to it. And as part of it, we can actually talk about atomic rays and other things that can actually help us.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds...
So as part of motivation and background,
yeah,
we can talk about these two things here. So I just sent you a link. It's not the PDF. I'm not able to find the PDF, but with the title, you should be able to find the PDF. The PDF is not opening for me. So it's a HPCA paper, HPCA 2011 paper.
Yeah, I've read this one long time back.
Yeah.
See, click for full text. Okay. Interesting. That's unusual. Usually I'm able to open this. FIT. Why is it going to Florida Institute of Technology? Okay, well, I'll find this paper because I was able to read it earlier, and so I'm sure I can get it.
There's one here, but let me see if I can find the cached version of it. Okay, yeah. For some reason, the actual contents is not opening up. So let me send you that link also. Yeah, I sent another email.
Okay, I think I found it, the PDF.
You found the PDF, perfect. So if you look at the PDF, there's one page that actually shows the diagram of how we implement it.
I still don't have it. I'll find it eventually.
Okay, let me see. I should have a PDF with some locally cached somewhere. Actually, I do. Okay, awesome.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Okay.
If you click on except that it's an HTML format. That's fine.
I found a presentation.
Raju, I sent you a PDF, actually.
Okay, great.
I found the paper and a presentation.
Awesome, okay. So figure 2 actually explains the concept.
Are we in the paper?
Yeah. Page 4.
Yeah. Implementing atomic write within a log-based FTL.
Yeah. So if you think about it, so when you have a series of zeros, now instead of ones followed by zeros, they have implemented, they have talked about zeros followed by ones.
Mm-hmm.
So if multi-block here, you see block 4, 6, and 8 are three different blocks that needs to be atomically written.
Yeah.
So you append it to the log with flag zeros, like say 0, 4, 0, 6, and then 1, 8. The third block, which is the final block when it goes in, you actually update. So one of the things, Leo, you asked about reordering, right? Since FTL actually is the one that controls the device, reordering typically happens above that FTL layer. It's not beneath the FTL layer.
Mm-hmm.
So right. FTL is the one that writes to the hardware. So typical reordering does not happen. That's the assumption that the hardware has. So FTL has about the hardware. If it gets reordered, then FTL cannot work correctly. This basically explains why atomic write is possible. Then if you read through the details, it actually talks about it.
I see. The Fusion IO card has a whole bunch of DRAM in it, right?
Maybe. I'm not sure if I can tell you those things, but...
let's forget about the Fusion IO card, but the normal... The non-Fusion IO card has a whole bunch of DRAM in it, right?
Some of the SSDs actually have a DRAM, yes.
So the writes actually get buffered inside that DRAM?
Yeah, because FTLs are also inside that device itself. It's not a host-based FTL.
Correct. So with this, for this to work, the with this, writes are atomic and durable. Correct?
With this, writes are atomic and durable. That is correct.
So which means every write I make to the FTL, it's immediately durable, as well as atomic if it's a multi-write.
Exactly.
So that's an interesting thing, because the write, if you want to carry this design over to a, you know, XYZ SSD that has a big write buffer in it, you can't do, you can't provide this guarantee. I think that's the main reason why people are a little bit confused about their claims of atomicity and durability.
No, the thing is, if they actually want to do that, then they have to flush the buffer.
Yeah.
Before acknowledging the write, so that is their responsibility.
So it's a write through cache for.
Yeah, it has to be write through cache for atomic writes, exactly.
Hmm.
We actually do something really smart.
Hmm.
To not pay the penalty and still get the benefits out of it.
Okay.
So we have something called a PowerCut flush buffer.
Oh, okay. So there is a and it's detects if there is a power failure, but if there is a crash, that doesn't help, right?
Crash and buffer is exactly the same.
Oh, it's the same.
Yeah.
If there's a software crash, does it say they kind of panic? How are you protected from that?
If software crashes panic, then what do you have to do? You have to reboot the machine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you reboot the machine, whatever data it is, it's almost the same as PowerCut then.
Mm. Interesting. Okay. It's a fail-safe, basically, regardless of what kind of failure occurs.
Yep.
Interesting. And that fail-safe buffer is inside the device.
Exactly.
Okay. Okay, so there is write buffering going on. It's just that it's like an NVRAM. Okay. So that is one of the things that makes the Fusion device more expensive, I guess.
Yep. That's one of the things. But other thing is the reliability.
I'm sure there are other things, but I'm saying that a normal SSD doesn't have that fail safety. An arbitrary SSD, like let's take the Intel SSD for instance, it doesn't have that.
So we are not SSD. So the other way to think about it is, SSDs are generally cheap and not that good capacity and not that great performance. So we actually try to, we don't compete with Intel or other people in the SSD market. We actually go for customers who need larger capacity but higher performance.
And reliability.
And want extremely good reliability, exactly. So it's a different market segment that we actually target.
Okay. So does that have implications on the FTL design? And does that have implications for our paper where we write about a strong integration between a key value store and an FTL? I think it would be difficult then for us. I think these are the subtle details which we probably can bring out better in the full paper, which is that you cannot simply marry this KV the newer FTL abstraction with any SSD out there, because you need things like the fail-safe buffer for performance. Right?
No.
So that you can buffer stuff.
It's for performance, right?
Yeah.
But it's not for correctness. The point is, if somebody wants to implement the same thing, they can simply flush the buffers and still solve that problem. The thing is, if you try to go deep into the hardware and explain the differences and stuff, then it becomes really hard to convince others that this is a good idea. So one of the things that we always have trouble with is to explain the generality. So what we try to stick to is to the key concepts of it, because log structuring is something that every FTL has to do.
Yeah.
And as long as, if you look at this paper, if you refresh this paper, you can see that just by simply putting a bunch of additional data along with the writes,
yeah,
we can guarantee atomicity of updates.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are not specific to Fusion product. It is still generic enough in terms of any SSD or any flash devices that has to operate, because no matter what, you have to log structuring. And if you're doing log structuring, you have to maintain some metadata.
Mm.
And as long as you store the corresponding metadata along with the data and add a few bits to it, actually one bit to every metadata block,
yeah,
we can absolutely guarantee atomicity of updates.
Mm-hmm.
So these things are conceptually the building blocks for the primitives that we need. And it's just that the SSDs have to implement it. It's not like they cannot, nothing fundamentally prevents them from implementing it. It's just that these are the things that are not surfaced by them yet.
Yeah.
And to your point, one of the things that we should definitely bring about is that this atomic interface, I don't think we brought it up in the talk, is that this interface is completely standardized now. And sooner, all SSDs, including Intel, Micron, Samsung, they are going to actually come up with atomic interface.
Right. So I got an email about it from Ricardo, because about this SCSI, new SCSI atomic write interface. I think that was finalized last year.
Yep, exactly.
Hmm.
So whether people like it or not, they have to start implementing it. It's just that SSDs didn't bother about it because they were looking at it as flash as a hard disk replacement.
Yeah.
We are trying to look beyond it, and as a result, if they really want to create In the abstract sense, something like a software-defined storage and stuff, or storage-defined software, for lack of a better word.
Yeah.
We actually have to change and improve the interfaces, and as a result, they have to start providing it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there are two things, right? One is the atomicity, the other is the durability. I think the new interface doesn't ask for durability.
Not durable, it's not atomic actually.
That is no wait no 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 they're two different things, right? Atomic and durable are two different things.
Conceptually, just two different things.
Mm-hmm. Because there is a write buffer inside.
Correct.
The SSD, it can choose to just buffer all the components of the atomic write and respond back to the writer saying that, okay, I'm going to make this an atomic write. It's either all going to happen or none of it is going to happen.
Correct.
And if write cache is enabled, then none of it may happen.
You were saying that you could potentially build a log in volatile memory and make everything atomic.
But yeah, some way, maybe a journal or whatever it is, in-memory journal. You could do it that way, and I expect that...
Yeah, absolutely. But it's still good enough for KV store too. There's nothing that fundamentally prevents it. But the point to think about it is, any storage device, whenever it acknowledges a user, right, you're almost guaranteeing that it is going to ensure that the data actually goes to the medium.
Only if the cache is flushed, right? Or you disable the cache.
Yeah, or somebody explicitly flushes the cache by issuing a barrier or something.
A barrier is not necessarily a cache flush either, right? It just means that you cannot reorder operations across the barrier.
Oh, sorry, my barrier I mean by... So some of the... Okay, sorry, we have... That's, yeah, it's an inconsistency in using the terminology. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a cache flush conceptually. Yep, exactly. So we use cache flush and barrier interchangeably for something else.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah.
So I expect that, you know, at least the SSDs that will trade off performance for durability will, and that allow the write cache to be enabled, will implement atomic write non-durably, right? Because it's just better for performance. All I'm saying is that we are looking at an FTL that's unique because it provides the atomicity as well as the durability as a building block. And that's why we can claim that KV puts are durable and atomic. if the underlying building block didn't guarantee atomicity or durability, we cannot claim that. And
okay.
I think that's, it, I mean, somehow that has to be very clear in the paper.
Well, that's a really good point. I finally see where you're coming, okay, where you're getting it. Okay, yeah. These things are trivial for us because this is what you're used to it.
Yeah.
But that's the trade-off being cutting edge in terms of compared to all others that exist in the market today.
Yeah.
I think you have a nice point. I think these are things that we can actually bring about and talk about it that shows the differentiator.
Yeah.
But only concern I have is basically it should not take the focus from the paper, focus of the idea that we bring is to simply put, if you have such a feature, then
yeah.
we can actually build a really powerful key value store with minimal amount of.
Oh, absolutely. I think this needs to go into a discussion section towards the end of the paper.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Upfront, we have to state our assumptions, give brief overview of how we build the building block, right?
Yeah.
And refer to that other paper that we just saw. I think all of that
yeah.
needs to come up front so that people are clear about what it is that we are claiming.
Yeah, I agree.
And okay, so Leo, besides this, was there any other feedback you got? I'm trying to recollect now. What was the other question you got? There were two questions, I think. Or was there only one?
There were two questions, but I think one of them was a codification question, was nothing relevant.
I see. And what was that about?
I don't remember.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm trying to think what are the questions we got outside. Yeah, I think that was about it. Guys, I have to rush to another meeting.
Okay, that sounds good. I think we have good points to discuss. Thanks a lot for the feedback, actually. This is very helpful. So I'll actually try to take these as inputs and try to come up with an outline. And I'll commit something to the Git repository that we have.
Sounds good to me.
And then we can work on top of it.
Sounds very good.
Okay.
Cool. Thank you so much, Raju, and thanks, Leo.
And
let's catch up sometime.
And
okay.
Do we meet next week, same time, or what
yeah,
do you want?
Next week, same time.
Okay.
Oh, no, actually, no, next week, same time doesn't work. I'm actually traveling to India. Thanks for bringing it up.
Okay, let's figure out a time then, by
yeah,
email.
Can I send you an email, basically? We might probably have to meet some other day, like Thursday, Friday or something, once I get to India.
Okay, sounds good.
So I'll send an email and then can we sync up just for next week and after that it should be okay.
Sounds good. And if you need to switch to time, that's fine too. And I can meet later or earlier, that's no problem.
Okay, that'll even better. Thank you so much. Yeah, I think that'll be helpful too.
Okay, all right. Have a safe
cool.
trip.
Thanks, Rachel.
Bye.
Okay.
Bye, Leo.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Bye.